helping affiliates navigate these challenges by sharing resources, doing things like being in the trenches with AFGE and doing phone banks to convert dues payers to e-dues to make sure that they're able to do the important representation work. You know, the list is long about how we're trying to address this moment, but I'm really proud of our movement here in Oregon, and I'm especially proud of how the broader national labor movement is stepping up to lead in this really challenging time. Because again, we are the most effective check to not just corporate greed, but the labor movement across this country is the most effective check to authoritarianism and attacks on our democracy. So,
thank you, Brother.
So, Brother Trainer, you have an AFL-CIO convention coming up in September. So what's your message going to be?
Well, our message and theme for the convention is strength through solidarity, unified, defend, empower. We are really, really excited about coming together on the beautiful Oregon coast in just a couple of weeks to talk about the strategy for the movement moving forward, some of the things that we're talking about today, to celebrate the wins that we've been able to lead on and win, but to also learn best practices for how to take on this fight over the next couple of years. Right, we know that specific communities like the LGBTQ community, like the immigrant community, are especially targeted with this bloated approach to ICE and masked agents coming into our communities and ripping people off the streets. That's not just an immigrant issue, that's a worker issue, and that's a labor issue that we are in the trenches with. And so we're proud to, at our convention, highlight the Oregon for All Coalition, the coalition led by Pakun and our immigrant rights coalition community, to really sort of empower the labor movement to double down in these moments of real great challenge that the immigrant rights community is facing. We're also really proud to highlight the Equal Rights for All Amendment strategy, which is an effort that's gathering petition signatures right as we speak to change the Constitution, to ask voters in 2026 to change the Constitution to codify marriage equality, access to reproductive justice, and gender-affirming care. At the same time, these same freedoms and benefits are being attacked at the federal level. And so we're going to have an entire panel focused on the Equal Rights for All Amendment strategy that is, again, not just an LGBTQ issue. This is a labor issue because it's a worker issue. And so I think that's really important to highlight. I'm really excited about the speaker lineup and seeing everybody. It's really a one-of-a-kind space. And, you know, my expectation is that we come out of that convention really focused and unified as we double down on this next couple years of challenge.
Wow. It really sounds like you have a lot in the hopper. And so please don't mind if we contact you again to give us an outread of how that convention went.
Anytime, sister, anytime.
You know we will.
Yes. Thank you, Brother Trainer. Oh, my goodness. For ensuring that the Oregon residents have a unified way of tracking this national chaos. Thank you for the creation of the Oregon Labor Dispatch and the monthly meeting laying out the local effect these threats pose to Oregon workers. Thank you again.
You bet. It's my honor to be with you anytime and look forward to, I think, probably seeing some of you at our convention anyway. So just in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. All right, all, we're going to wrap up here. The Coalition of Black Trade Unionists meets the second Tuesday of every month at 6 o'clock p.m. We have suspended our face-to-face meetings and are utilizing Google Meet to conduct our monthly meetings. We will meet next on Tuesday, October 7th, 2025 at 6 o'clock p.m. Our email address is orcbtu10, and that's the number 10, 10, at gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Please join us in our ever-evolving adventure of representing Black union workers. And also, remember to go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to help us maintain our independence and ability to serve our communities. And with that, we'll say holla and happy Labor Day.
I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli, and today we're here with Richie. How you doing today?
I'm blessed. Gratitude. Thank you.
All right. So great to have you on, bro. Thanks again for being on. And let's get right into it. Tell us about you and all these great things you're doing. There's a long story there, how you got there. So,
all right. Well, gratitude. Yeah, I just want to offer my blessings to all of the relatives out there, in particular, the ancestors of the land that you and I both are on right now. Just giving thanks for that, the elements, Mother Earth, and all of the things that we've been provided here as human beings. I would like to also just introduce myself in language. Kaniyoase Richie, Kaniyoase Miwu Machuksis. My name is Richie Richard Luis Raguto Jr. I'm known as Richie Ladrigal in the industry. I'm an indigenous artist activist from here in Northern California, and also hold many other titles in life, including being a proud father, which is probably my most important title. But I do a lot of other things in what we call the smallest country in the world, sir, Indian country. It's here at an event right now, and just being honored and humbled just to be able to share this message through the best way I know how, through this music and through culture.
Richie, we recently connected around a few things that intersected related to incarceration and the work that we do supporting people who are incarcerated and have been incarcerated in communities who are targeted for incarceration and that whole thing. And that's also one thing that you had that experience with. Can you just talk a little bit about that? Because that's a big part of what I would like to consider, like, your, you know, these success stories and people becoming successful despite having been through that monster of incarceration. Can you tell us some context there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, unfortunately, I grew up in an era where gang violence and drugs were very prevalent in the neighborhood that I grew up in. And you know, I became part of that, and I became part of the system that was created to hold us down, to oppress us. You know, people like myself and many others, when we went into survival mode. And because of that, some of the choices I made put me in situations where I was actually incarcerated for the majority of my youth, from the age of 11 to 19. And, you know, I've been through many facilities, and not to brag or boast about it at all. You know, it's just part of my life experience and the things that I went through, for the choices that I made. The consequences put me in juvenile hall and the boys ranch, and then in an amazing program called Rites of Passage, ROP, in Nevada, that I believe saved my life, to be honest with you. And it was a facility that was a placement, even though it was considered incarceration. It was a place that had a remote training center, and they taught you discipline, and then they had an athletic training center. We were able to play sports against regular high schools, and then they did a lot of community service and activism and things like that. So it was either ROP or YA, the Youth Authority. And, you know, ironically, came full circle meeting you. Like you said, things intersected. There was a lot of synergy, and we were able to come and tell that story, some of the young men out there in Oregon. So, you know, I believe in that theory. Life is a circle, you know, and that was one of the things that had came full circle for me. So I'm full of gratitude to be able to share that story.
Yeah, and you do so much now. It's almost hard to, I wouldn't say hard to talk about, but the scope of all what you do and how that led up. What would you say were some things, like, for you that, I mean, you mentioned being, you know, one or two programs that helped out, but there's stuff that you did or have done, or maybe just the kind of person that you are, that you're able to really make it out in a sense, you know, and continue to have a successful life. And that's not something that everybody does or maybe can do. What do you think are some other things? I mean, you know, you had some programming, but there's also things that you just, you did as a person, you know, that maybe other people can, you know, should really benefit from, who are inside and are going to be outside soon, or are outside and really trying to kind of like get back to having like a normal life in the community.
To be real with you, you know, on the way back out to the area that I'm in right now, I cried this morning, you know, because I'm in a situation right now where, you know, I got to come up with a certain amount of money to pay for my car to get out the shop. And I sat last week and thought about it, and I could have very well just gave up and said, you know, forget it. I'm not going to do what I need to do, what's necessary, what's inside of me that I know that I can do to go get this bill paid. But that was a brief moment. You know, that was a brief moment, and I had to snap myself out of it. And this morning on the way back to this event, I cried because I said, thank you, Creator, because I know the truth. The truth is already inside of me. I know what I need to do. It's already inside of me. I can't block myself, stop myself. And that was a good lesson for me today, that everything that I want to achieve, anything that I ever wanted to achieve in life, was all on me. I had it inside of me. I just had to make the choice to do it. I had to make the right choice. Every moment, you know, each step leading to the next, like, okay, I got to make the right choice and continue to make the right choice. And when you do the right thing, good things happen, you know, and there's real consequences in this universe. And, you know, that was a good lesson for me to learn today. And I think that's the message that I was intended to share in this portion, this segment of the program.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, obviously you're very connected to your culture and everything that you do now. And how did that transform, though? What did that look like when you were inside, and how were you connecting or not with your culture? And also, how was it? It had to be very difficult anyways, because there's very little resources, right, mm-hmm. that people get to connect with their culture inside. So were there any particular things that helped kind of along the way with that?
Not in the institutions. You know, now I was sharing with a couple relatives, there's actually these laws now. One of my relatives is part of a nonprofit organization, and that's what they do. They go into prisons and they go into the juvenile halls and they help get medicine for the people. They help take them Sage, and they help take them different things. And he was telling me a lot of inmates, just, they don't know that that's a law. They don't know that they have that right. And so he's working with those people to go out there and give them to that. I didn't have that, unfortunately, you know, but I always knew. I knew that I was Native. I was connected to culture as a youth. I knew I was Native, but we didn't have a lot of it. So I had to go find that. But the other thing I did throughout my entire life, including when I was incarcerated, was I never stopped educating myself. I never stopped reading great material, including the Bible, which I think was one of the best books ever written. You know, I mean, I know there's many different versions of it and all of that, but it's an amazing story. And, you know, we all share one thing in common in this world. And those are the major catastrophes that have happened that have been documented in every race and religion, and including the big flood. And that's included in our origin story, and as far as indigenous people as well. So, you know what I mean? It's those types of things, is educating myself about history and the history of my people and the history of this, the construct of this world that we know it as we know it. You know, and then beyond that as well.
Can you talk a little bit, just a little bit more about when you refer to medicine? And I only ask because, you know, non-native listeners then maybe not as clear on, you know, on what that looks like. And especially when it comes to what you were saying about the access to that, you know, being inside, people having religious rites.
So most of the medicines that I speak of are this, you know, a tangible form of it would be sage, or cedar, or maybe some root, some kind of root that we use in our ceremonies when we sing our songs. And that's the other form of the medicine, is the prayer part of it, that what you bring to it, you know what I mean? But when I refer to medicine, that's what I'm talking about. Either the tangible form of it that comes in the natural elements and the resources that we utilize in different ceremonies, and then the medicine that the people bring. That maybe a shaman or a doctor or something like that in our way, somebody that can heal somebody or take sickness away or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you don't mind me asking, if you maybe could just talk a little bit about just, you know, because when we met and you were at, well, two of the youth correctional facilities in Oregon, and you had the feather. And again, people are still talking about that a lot. You know, there was a lot of things that happened and went down with that. Can you talk just a little bit about that and what that entails? Because that was that's a serious blessing right there.
Yeah, man, to be real with you, I am going to talk about it, but it does bring a lot of hurt and pain. You know what I mean? Because I felt a lot of that day. You know, and I had to be able to do my own thing to protect myself to get rid of that, because I had taken away a lot of stuff from a lot of those people that day too. You know what I mean? And that's part of the medicine. You know, we use different forms of prayer to help people, to heal people, and to read energy and to work with it in a sense. You know what I mean? And that was, man, that was special, because that was the first time I ever broke that eagle wing out. That was my dad's eagle wing, and he used that to doctor up and pray with many people. I had to do my due diligence and do the right thing culturally to go fast with that feather and go take care of that. And when I used it that day, it was the first time, but I knew I needed to use it on those young men. And we worked with the men in that, and we cleaned them off, and you know what I mean? It was special. That was an eagle wing. And that's one of the ways that we do it. We use that to help the people and clean them up and clean them off. But again, I've been learning how to, like, we are the medicine. I've been learning how to be able to use my hands, my energy to do the same thing. And just wanted to get that point across. A lot of times people think they have to have their cross, or they have to have their medicine bag, or they have to have that on them to protect themselves. No, you can be the medicine yourself. And that's one of my biggest messages that I like to get across to the people, you know. But yeah, thank you for sharing that, because I was a tough crowd, a tough audience, but I knew that feather would tell the truth, and that, you know, we would be able to work in a good way with that medicine.
Yeah, that is beautiful. I've never seen a feather that big or any medicine as powerful as that, and I think that helped a lot of people, and I think some people figured some things out that day, actually. Maybe not everybody, but there's a few people I think they figured some things out, you know. And just like you had to figure things out, which kind of segues to the next piece here, is like, can you talk a little bit about what the transition looked like? You know, you were so young, you spent all that time inside, you know, and then now you're back out trying to, like, figure things out. What did that look like? What kind of support did you have or didn't you have? And of course, like you said, you know, just being your own, you know, strong person and working with the medicine, and how, you know, just developing all those things, you know, moving forward outside.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really super connect to culture until I was in my 30s. You know, I had been introduced to it. I knew, I've been to many reses. I lived on a reservation for 15 years. Like, but I didn't really get introduced to culture in our own California ways either. My dad, when he went through recovery, he went through the powwow circuit. And that's not necessarily our California ways, you know what I mean? So a lot of the culture that I was introduced to initially was through the powwow circuit. When I got out, I had to lean on what I knew how to do, and that was music. And you know what I mean? When I was young, when I wasn't incarcerated, I was always involved in sports. I always maintained an amazing GPA no matter what, whether I was incarcerated or not. You know, I always kept myself educated and just read a lot. And I always knew that I had, that Creator had a plan for me. So, you know, I always knew that I had to continue to do the right thing, you know. And I also had a son at a very young age, forced me into adulthood and really, really changed my life, you know. And then just never giving up on myself either. Always really believing in myself, true. Like, sometimes it feels, I think even to this day, it feels a little egotistical that I have to believe in myself so much in order to do the things that I'm able to do. You know what I mean? I got $250 million of economic development under my belt for Northern California tribal people. one person, one man, no major backing or funding from any other entities, just creating all of this for just believing that I could do it and that we could do it if we just believed in it. You know what I mean? You got to believe in yourself, you know, but you got to really, truly believe in yourself. That's why the reason I was crying earlier, because I was a little upset with myself. Like, okay, man, look at all these things you've done. Like, don't allow your human being to hold you down from the real work and what you're really intended to do here on Mother Earth. No offense, Richie, but $250 million ain't nothing. You better get to a billion, son, before you could start thinking that you could even mention that to people or talk about it as if you've done something. Feel me?
Let's go back to the music just real quick, because you said how that was something that, yeah, you connected with, it developed over time. That's something that you continue to do or even do more of. What does that look like? Where could people find your music and things like that? What kind of music are you doing?
I've been in the industry for 30 years, strictly independent. Never took no drug money, never took no dirty money, no blood money, nothing like that. Never signed no deals, anything. I've been offered all of that. Strictly independent, held my morals, my values, my ground, my ethics is all the way through. You know what I mean? But I'm on every digital media platform that's out there. Richie Ledregal. Ledregal is spelled Ledregale, just in case anybody's out there listening. I am on JPay, I think, which is the prison radio thing, so people can actually hear my music on there. I'm on a worldwide tour right now. I'm still pinching myself. Opening up for KRS-One, one of the legends in hip-hop, this Friday. The tour is called the Sacred Circle Tour. And you asked me a question earlier about what has maintained me throughout this entire thing and how do I sustain myself. And the main backbone of that is my sacred circle, the people that have always been there, the people that continue to come into my life, people like you. You know, like I've met a lot of people in my life that have become my really good friends that I didn't grow up with. I'm blessed for that. But the music thing as a youngster kept me motivated. I wanted to get my message out there. My original message to the music was intended to keep the memory of my best friend alive, who was murdered in front of me at the age of 14. You know, so I wanted to make sure that I had a platform to keep his name alive. And then when I was introduced to culture and started practicing my ways, then I started shifting that message towards the Native community and our issues and the challenges that we face and we go through, and being able to tell the story of the California indigenous people.
Yeah, and your music is, you know, I call it like inspirational music. I mean, it's the genres like hip hop, right? That's the main genre, right? And then it's like, but then subgenres like inspirational music. It's all positive lyrics. And can you just talk a little bit about how, you know, you come up with some of these things? What's on the next thing too? What's up and coming with all that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up in the inner city. I did live on the res, but I grew up in the hood, Sacramento, California. West Coast vibes, very heavy in my music, you know what I mean? But as you could say, and most people have said that to me often, I feel blessed that you even said that word, tied it into the music, inspirational, you know what I mean? I get that from a lot of people, but it has real West Coast heavy tones to it as far as the beats and the cadence and all of that. And that draws people in. And then once you start listening to the words, you're like, oh, wait, this is a little different. Let me tune in a little more. What is he actually saying here? Okay. Okay, Richie. So I use that. I use that in my fashion and all of the things that I create. I know what draws people in, and then I deliver the message.
Right on. Let's talk more about all this stuff that you're creating. I mean, you've been building projects, organizations, business, enterprise. I mean, all that. Where did that initially like start, though? I mean, building up to all that, because we want to hear about all the stuff, but how did you build on that? And what were the elements of those, I'll call them like building blocks?
One major component of all of that. I'm a disenfranchised or disenrolled member of my tribe, and I have been for a long time. And that broke my spirit as a youth, not feeling that I belonged to my tribe, to my people, not feeling that I had the same access to the resources that they have to because of a piece of paper or a mistake that was made or something that might have maybe possibly been done intentionally to use a form of governmental power as erasure for certain people, like to eradicate our own kind. This disenrollment or disenfranchisement. That's what it is. But it's only on paper. I'm still Native no matter what, you know. And that was my major motivation in becoming more educated and formulating a 501c3, because I figured out, oh, how can I become a tribe? How can I service to people? How can I operate in a way that I can develop social services and vocational training and all of these other aspects that tribes should be doing for people and that my tribe wasn't doing for me? So instead of me being bitter about it, I said, I'll just go start my own entity. And I figured out 501c3 was the way to do it. And, you know, other ventures as far as the LLC and the business stuff and how I was going to sustain the 501c3. And, you know, that was my major motivation, was to do that, create a formula, create modules that I could then go share with other people so that they can continue to light those fires in their communities and their places and their spaces. That's how there is, I believe, 8 nonprofit organizations under the umbrella of the entrepreneurial training that we created. There's at least 10 LLCs under that umbrella. You know what I mean? And they've all got major money. That's how I have $250 million of economic development under my belt, is just the motivation of me going through a circumstance and reversing that situation, not just for myself, but for generations of people. You know what I mean? That's magic.
Yeah, that's a lot too. Since we don't have, you know, probably enough time to talk about all that, is there maybe like, maybe one you would focus on, or I guess maybe one larger umbrella people could check out or learn about that you would feature with all these endeavors?
I mean, honestly, I would just encourage people to just Google my name. Unfortunately, my artist name is bigger than my surname now, like, or my government name, because I became lightweight, a B-list celebrity, I guess you could say. I mean, in our community, I'm a celebrity. In other communities now, I'm becoming that same thing. But just Google my name, Richie Ladrigal. All of the things that I've worked on and what I've done, or most of them, will pop up. Indigenous Circles United was the nonprofit that we founded that created a community center. Indigenous Warrior Enterprise, you know, was the LLC that did the most work with, including the magazine, the music festival, all of the other stuff in the industry, entertainment industry. If you Google those two entities, Indigenous Circles United, Indigenous Warrior Enterprise, and then Richie Ladrigal, you'll basically get my entire life story, because I document my entire adult life story on social media. My ups, my downs, the wins, the losses, everything I've been through, all of the trainings, the events, everything. You can find that if you Google my name, Richie Ladrigal. Feel me?
Yeah, and I know that a lot of focus of what you do is, you know, uplifting communities, your community, indigenous folks, people who have been through all kinds of rough times, including incarceration. Can you maybe give just one, you know, one example or something like that of just what kind of things you've been able to just help people with?
Yeah, I think a lot of times I do truly believe it's my personal story and the energy that I bring when I step into an environment. But through the programs, you know, we develop, for example, through the nonprofit organization, we were able to do 10 youth summits in a 10-year span, one each year throughout the state of California, in service of thousands of youth. Also through the same nonprofit organization, we were able to create these after-school programs and curriculum for after-school programs for a Native entity called Tribal TANF. And I ran 3 programs simultaneously in Colusa, California, Chico, California, and Oroville. But the economic development came through the entrepreneurial training, which is a week-long training that is a special training for Native entrepreneurs. But we bring in lawyers and accountants and graphic designers and business planners. And we bring in mentors and other business owners. And it's a full-fledged training that we're able to introduce our people to. But I also do business consulting and have introduced many Northern California tribes to the Reservation Economic Summit, which is the largest economic development summit for tribal people in the world That's how it's every year in Las Vegas. So it's a combination of a lot of those things. You know what I mean? There's many layers to it, and it's very complex, but the results are, the proof is in the pudding.
Can you tell us just briefly about, is the next one planned for 2026, or how is that shaping up?
Yeah, we got the entrepreneurative training. We just tapped in with CIMC, the California Indian Manpower Consortium. I'm going to put a little pressure on them by saying that we're going to bring the training back. They do a similar training that I went through, and then I developed the entrepreneurative training. We're in talks right now to actually combine the two trainings to bring it back one more time for the people. West Coast Function Fest is a big music festival that's underway right now. That's going to happen on Memorial Day weekend in Yucca Ama in Northern California, Forestville, California, but it's on native land. It's a consortium called Yucca Ama. And yeah, those are the two major things that we're planning. And then the tour, of course, you know, we're still on the tour, and part of the tour is actually doing the workshops, carrying culture workshops, and a little bit of economic development in regards to one page business plan. And we're working on the book, the Indigenous Warrior book, and the docu-movie. All those things are underway, plus three music projects.
What is that book about?
It's about my dad's life story, my life story, and then a little bit about the message to all of the other Indigenous warriors around the world that are a part of that same universal prayer.
In that context, since we're wrapping up, is there anything, you know, you'd like to say about that in that context? Just then, all those positive messages you got.
Yeah, no, I do want to tap into that universal prayer. You know, I feel like you're part of it. All of the relatives I met on my path, you know, have their own story, but there's certain people that are tapped into this energy and this wavelength. And if you're out there right now, you know, I appreciate you. Gratitude. Thank you for being a warrior.